Hello, and welcome back to the Wise Athletes Podcast with your hosts, Joe Lavelle and Glenn Winkle. On today's episode, number 98, we are talking with Jesse Jarjour, who is a professional bike fitter and also the CEO and co-founder of MyVeloFit, the virtual bike fitting solution that has been in the cycling news media for the last 2 years. We spoke with Jesse over 2 years ago when VeloFit first launched. Today, we get an update on how the service has progressed to be even easier for riders to use, to identify improvements in their bike fit, or just to get feedback on the rider position after adjustments were made to the bike, all at a fraction of a normal bike fit cost. In addition, Jesse gives us the lowdown on their new free AI service that allows riders to discover which bikes among various brand model sizes would fit the rider based on bike dimensions versus rider body size, movement mechanics, and riding goals. If you have ever tried to compare different bikes of the same quote-unquote size, you will know how amazingly useful this service will be to use. And did I say it's free? After doing 100,000 bike fits over the last 2+ years, Jesse has a ton of useful information to share. All right, let's talk to Jesse Jarjour of VeloFit, the virtual bike fitting service accessible anywhere you have an internet connection. Jesse Jarjour, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Jesse, it's great to have you back.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's been, more than 2 years. I think you were episode number 27. You were one of the first few, and you guys do virtual bike fitting, I guess, among other things. But anyway, the thing that I reached out to you about was an article that I saw, I think in Cycling Tips, maybe, was it? Where you guys had launched a virtual bike fitting service, which I had never heard of before. And then I found it amazingly useful. You know, I guess I would never have guessed that it would be as good as it was. And I imagine that it has developed from there. So, Jesse, give us an update.
Yeah, excuse me. Sorry, I have to apologize for my raspy voice. We have some forest fires here.
Oh, yes.
2 years ago, you would have been kind of on our very first version, which would have, you know, I don't want to call it a beta version, but, you know, we've improved a lot over time. A lot of the original ranges and the way we process data has stayed the same, but what we've done is improved accuracy, improved how we catch errors. If you remember before, it was quite picky on the video orientation, the way you recorded the video. So we've done a lot of improvements there. The key fit metrics haven't really changed that much since. We've improved the way we collect that data a little bit more, and on the back end, we're working on a new and improved version where it'll be a bit more accurate again. Mostly improvements in usability, I would say.
So just make it easier on the user?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And I understand that you've got a new, you called it an AI bike sizing feature. What, tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's actually really funny. If you asked me 2 months before we launched originally, my plan was to have sizing as part of our fit product because a lot of times people are on the wrong bike.
Yeah, makes it hard to fit it if they're starting with the wrong size, eh?
Exactly. So one of my goals was to create this sizing program at the same time. And, you know, it didn't come out until about a year ago. So it was a year behind the launch of the main product. And what it does is it scans your body. You upload a video of yourself turning around in a circle. And we collect all the body segment lengths. And then we digitally pose you on your bike or on any bike, basically, that we have in our database. And that lets us, instead of, you know, saying you're 6 feet tall, so you should be on a 58 in this brand, we're able to actually show you how you fit on individual bikes. In doing this and in designing this, we looked a lot at how manufacturers recommend sizes, and it got pretty sketchy as we looked at it. You know, we'd have brands that have the same recommendation on two bikes, but those bikes are completely different geometries. So we're like, what is this recommendation coming from? The other one, you know, everybody, if you use size buckets, so if you say you're from 5'8 to 6'1, you fit this size.
Yeah.
You always fit a size if you only have size buckets, where what we found is based on your body segments and the way, you know, your individual anatomy, there are bikes out there that you don't fit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Now try selling that to a manufacturer and they don't like that, right? We talked that we had a lot of brands reach out and say, oh, we want this. And we're like, well, we will tell you some of your bikes don't fit people. And then we're like, oh, we don't want that. They have to fit everybody. So what we quickly realized was we're building this for the riders, not for the manufacturers, because we want to tell you, most importantly, when a bike doesn't fit. It's great that a bike fits, but it's way more important to tell people that a bike doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So we'll have people we reach out sometimes, say there's something wrong. This is saying this bike doesn't fit me. And it doesn't fit you. That's what we're telling you.
It is a tricky thing getting the right size. And sometimes in my personal experience, the issue is that you end up with opportunities, you know, a sale or a bike, a friend is selling a bike and you're pretty sure you can make it fit. And a smaller bike is lighter anyway. So you're kind of leaning that way. And so my experience was that one time my bike was in the shop and I was going to go ride with a friend and he loaned me his bike, which was a size bigger than I was used to riding. His bike fit me better than my bike did. And I was like, oh my God, this bike feels great. What is different about it? He's like, it fits you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, we have a lot of bias in the bikes we ride and why. And there's also, it's not, if you're moderately technical, it's easy to determine how two bikes are different. But for the average consumer, you know, they just want to know that if they're a 56, they're going to buy a 56 forever.
Yeah.
But for instance, I'm shopping for a Tarmac right now. I'm always shopping for a Tarmac, but I'm thinking one day I'll actually pull the trigger on a Specialized Tarmac. And the 54 Tarmac is actually identical geometry to my, well, very close in geometry to my 52 Madone.
Oh.
So if I was going from my Madone to a Tarmac, I would go from 52 to a 54. And so we did a big analysis. We've got a huge database now of all the bikes out there. And we did a huge analysis of how different bikes fit different. And, you know, it's just, you can't use size numbers as a size. You can't say a 52 and one brand's the same. Even within a brand, if you look at Trek, for instance, a 52 Damani and a 52 Madone are a world different, and they've designed it that way.
Do they?
They do, yeah. So they've designed it. If we really want to get into the weeds of how a bike fit,
yeah,
there's a couple components to it. It's one, it's how you fit on the bike and how you want to ride that bike. Because you can fit multiple bikes, but one position will be aggressive, one position will be more conservative. And by aggressive, I mean longer and lower. Yeah. And by conservative, I mean more upright. So there's more than just how you fit the bike, the position you're on the bike. And there's also how you want to ride the bike. So we've had to kind of develop that as part of our process. We ask you when you're doing your body scans, what are you doing? Are you looking for an aggressive position? Are you looking for a more conservative position? And then we score the bike based on how it fits in the position you desire.
And do the geometries of bikes within a brand, even within a model, change over time? So as the 2016 model is different from the 2020 model?
Yes, it's rarer that will happen, and they're usually minor tweaks, but you'll see big changes. Cervelo, for a long time, had the same geometry across all their road bikes, which made it really easy if you were, you know, shopping for a really high-end one, but the store only had a low-end one. You ride whichever one's there, and then you order the bike that you want.
Yeah.
But they've changed that now, and they have a lot of different geometries across their bikes. With our product, we've intentionally decided to do new models only, or current models only.
Okay.
So our database doesn't go back in time.
I guess that would just be another dimension of complexity, huh?
Yeah, it would be a different layer of complexity. Eventually, this will be a full-time job of managing this database of bikes for people. Right now, we have a couple different people managing it, on the side.
Yeah.
Eventually, it will be a full-time role for somebody to manage.
I'm not sure anybody has ever done that sort of analysis comprehensively in any case. What are the brands that people who are looking for a more relaxed geometry for a road bike
I remember Cervelo was always the tall head tube, and that was, you know, less aggressive if you wanted it to be. And Focus, I think, was another one that had kind of the, halt, the tall head tubes. Anyway, that was just my what I had heard. What has your analysis shown?
You know, I haven't broken it down by brand. What you will find is most brands now have those endurance geometries as part of their lineup. So Trek with the the Damani, Specialized with the Roubaix, come to mind, Giant with the Defy. So they all have an endurance bike, and then they have their race bike. If you plot them on the spectrum, which we've done, if you go into our blog, which we call the Fit Academy, we have a couple articles on bike sizing and the science behind bike sizing. If you plot them, you'll see that, if I remember correctly, the Roubaix is the most upright of the, you know, your standard kind of big brand.
Specialized.
Yeah, the Specialized Roubaix would be the most endurance of the endurance bikes. And then I think it's the Cannondale Synapse would be the most racy of the endurance bikes. Because again, across that spectrum, you might want to be really upright. You might want to be a bit more aggressive, but still not have a pure race bike. And that's how we kind of plot them. So we've plotted the spectrum of all the bikes, and then you can see what that looks like.
Great. Well, I'll get a link to that into the show notes because that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's about a year old, so I'm sure there's new models on there. But yeah, we have a series of posts on, you know, what's wrong with bike sizing, how we're fixing it with our sizing model, and then kind of the data of bike sizing. One of the things we did was plot all the bikes by, well, all of the bikes of one size by top tube length and show how differently they are. And then we also plotted how differently they actually fit. So top tube doesn't actually tell you how a bike fits. We like to use stack and reach, which is becoming more accepted now. It used to be if you said that 5 years ago, you'd get laughed off the podcast.
Yeah.
But now stack and reach is pretty accepted as showing how a bike will fit.
And the manufacturers are providing those statistics?
The vast majority of them are, yeah.
Okay, so that helps as opposed to 58 or 56, but still you getting the measurements of a person and then putting them on the different geometries is a cleaner way to get a sense of this is how that's going to fit you. Is that consistent with your idea, you know, of how you want to ride this bike or not? So tell us about this virtual bike fitting thing has become a thing. I mean, when I read that article a couple of years ago about you guys, I had never heard of it before and thought, how could that be possible? You know, it just seemed possible to me. And then I did it and it was like, oh, wow, you know, this is really cool. But other people are doing it. I think, you know, it was kind of a COVID thing where, you know, people couldn't come in, there was social distancing. And so people still wanted to ride their bike though. And they got new bikes and they had problems and they wanted to resolve problems. And so there was these different ways that people were coming up with to provide bike fits without being together. But you guys are still doing it. Tell us about, you know, within this market of people who need a bike fit, what is the niche of people that are really best served by a virtual bike fit?
That's a good question. There's a lot to it. We have a really diverse user base. It does lean more performance than I would expect. So our mission when we started this was to, you know, make bike fit accessible to everybody. There's a lot of people who don't have a good local bike fitter, or, you know, during COVID they couldn't get to a bike fitter. Yeah, you know, I am a bike fitter and I had to close my studio during COVID. So we have users kind of everywhere. I would say our average user is, it's so hard to say that there are it's all over the board.
Yeah. Well, you can have more than one niche of people. You know, what kind of racers are you working with? Is it people who don't have access? You know, it would be like a 3-hour drive to get to a bike fitter kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, on the performance side, we have people who are, we have pro tour riders using us, world tour riders. Wow. I've seen some Alpecin Phoenix riders, or I guess they're Alpecin De Kooning. We had a previous year world champion on the mountain bike use us.
Wow.
And these are just the ones when, you know, I have my feed in the background and I'll look and I'll be like, oh, that person looks fit and they're wearing a world champion jersey. Like, oh, that's actually whoever it was, right? I don't want to,
yes,
you know, say who's using it, but so all over. I mean, from we have less of the beginner than I would expect, and I think it's because they're not comfortable making the adjustments to the bike themselves.
Okay.
And that's always one that I wish we had more, and we're working on more tools to help you make those adjustments. But I see this, you know, our goal isn't to get rid of bike fitters. Our goal is to help people take their fit into their own hands. And we often, you know, we'll have people reach out and say, hey, I've made these adjustments, but I'm still uncomfortable. And we'll find a good fitter in the area to recommend them to, or I'll work with them personally on their fit.
I got you. I guess sometimes the issue is that they've got some issue with their body. And
yes,
I guess the computer can't really do something about that. What do you guys do in that case?
Well, we partnered with a brand called Dynamic Cyclist, which is another Canadian company, and they have strength and mobility work specifically for cyclists. Ah. I'm happy to give them a mention here because I use their program almost every day and I find it really helpful. So often we'll send them to that as kind of a starting point. Just like we're not here to replace bike fitters, I don't think they're there to replace physiotherapists and, you know, chiropractors, whatever it may be. So we try to help identify what they need, and we'll try to find, you know, a good physiotherapist for them or a chiropractor or whatever it may be in their specific use case. We do have our mobility assessment on our end too, which will help cater the fit for the individual's lack of mobility or whatever it may be.
Got it. Well, that's great. Seems like you would need to do that. I would expect that the way that this would go is kind of the way my own progression went, where I really, you know, I can remember when I didn't know how to change the tire and I was just terrified I was going to get a flat, and then one day I did. And I had to learn how to change a tire on the side of the road. Yeah. It's like, oh, how do I do this now? And then getting a wrench out and loosening something and tightening something, it was like, oh man, I hope my bike doesn't fall apart while I'm going down a mountain, you know, now that I've loosened something up. But, you know, over time you dabble and you get a little more comfortable with it, and you get a little more comfortable with it. And then you find, wow, this is a lot easier than packing my bike up into the car and ride, you know, going down to the bike shop and getting them to do something. And really, I just wanted to move it a millimeter. You know, maybe that's what you're discovering, is that the brand new person is maybe a little too uncomfortable with this. But once they get used to this process, they become more comfortable with it. Is that right?
Yes. And I think there's also a lot in, you know, allowing people to adjust their bike, but also being that reference point to be, have you gone too far in one direction or the other? I think as a bike fitter, and you'll see this with a lot of bike fitters, is they'll set a position and say, don't touch it.
Yeah.
And there's validity in that, mostly in that, you know, if people then go and ride their bike and make adjustments, you don't know if they're going to go too far. You don't know if they're going to have, you know, boundaries on how they adjust their bike, where with my VeloFit, you can just upload another video. You can make that adjustment. And I, as a bike fitter, have come more to terms with the idea of, you know, guiding people and saying, you know, this is where I've put you today. You may need to go up or down very slightly, but my goal is to get you into this acceptable range for how you ride your bike.
Yeah. So once you have resolved this back thing, maybe you can, you know, lower something or raise something and get closer to that position that you said you wanted, but it is not really suitable for you in your current fitness level.
Exactly. And so with our product, you can just upload a video whenever you'd like and check and say, you know what, maybe I want to be more aggressive. So you upload a video and it's like, oh, I've gone too aggressive. So then you can come back up a little bit.
Cool. So I wonder, kind of shifting away from how it all works, but move toward, what have you found? I'm just kind of curious, what sort of changes do people generally are told to do by your system? Are they raising their saddle or lowering it? Are they raising their handlebars or lowering them? Are they on the wrong bike? Start all over.
A lot of lowering saddles. Yes. A lot of lowering saddles. I would say if there's anything we recommend, I mean, there's a lot of raising saddles too, but I find I have this theory that if people aren't really trying to get their saddle height right, they're usually, they set it too low. But then it's the people are like, they have this concept of, you know, getting the right saddle height and they start playing with it and they almost always go too high. And then when you ride a saddle that's too high, you get used to a saddle that's too high. And it, like, there's a lot of things about the bike that it makes uncomfortable, most likely the seat. It's very hard to have a comfortable or be comfortable on your seat if it's too high. But then if you lower them, it always feels the right. If you've been riding with a saddle that's too high, the right height feels too low.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of feedback where it's like, oh, you know, your saddle, you set my saddle too low. I can tell it's just way too low. Yeah. And we just say, you know, give it a week. And this is one of the reasons why we have access over time for our service. Give it a week, ride like this. And almost universally, they'll come back and say, you know what, you're right. I'm more comfortable and more powerful. I don't have numbness anymore in my saddle or whatever it may be.
Right, right. I don't have to point my saddle down
to
remove the pain. So now I'm not sitting on my hands and numb hands.
Yep.
Right. Okay.
We have a post in our blog called Fit Red Flags. And one of the big Fit Red Flags is that saddle aimed way nose down. If you have to do that to get comfortable, there's something wrong.
Yeah, if you're having to scoot yourself back all the time, that's a signal that something isn't quite right. Okay. Well, anything else that you find? And I wanted to ask you about crank length. I don't know that you guys actually like look at crank length in your system, but I've been hearing more and more about how shorter cranks are really an advantage for people. And it's a really uncommon thing for people to change. I mean, it's a hard thing to change, you know, unless it's like a stationary bike that's got a, you know, a little lever that you can use to change the length of the crank. But what do you think about the crank lengths?
Oh, I mean, crank length has been a battle I've been fighting for years as a bike fitter. So yeah, universally, especially on a TT or triathlon bike, going shorter has almost no negative effect, and it improves the fit so much. Our system, so the really interesting thing with the way we fit is we have no concept of the bike when we're taking measurements. We don't record anything about the bike. It's all about how you move. So we can't identify how long your cranks are. We can identify if you're moving in a way that signals that the cranks are too long. So we look at a few things with that, mostly the ratio of knee extension to knee flexion. So how much your knee is extending and flexing through the pedal stroke. We also look at kind of how you're moving in the pedal stroke, if there's inefficiencies there. And then especially when you get into a more aggressive position, how closed the hip angle is. So we look at all these things. But it's also really hard to say how much. Just like we have, we use an iterative process for raising and lowering the saddle. We might say raise the saddle 5 millimeters, but you might have to do that 2 or 3 times. The same thing with the crank. We can identify that the crank's too long, but we can't identify yet how long it is or how much you need to go. And so for changing a saddle 5 millimeters a few times, it doesn't really matter. Changing a crank 3 times, it gets really expensive. There's a company, and I'm forgetting their name, that just launched an adjustable crank length. They're really, I'll find you the link so you can put it in the notes, because I think they're really like a consumer available adjustable crank, which I think is a fantastic tool for a lot of people. So yes, we do identify if the cranks are too long. We don't identify by how much.
I got you. Okay. I guess another thing that I've been, have heard a lot about over the years, and don't actually recall how this was dealt with in my own fit that I did with you guys a couple of years ago, but the asymmetries. Maybe if you're only looking at one side of the person, then maybe that side fits just right, but the other side isn't fitting just right if my leg is a different length or I've got some tightness somewhere and so my leg moves differently than the other leg. How do you deal with that?
Well, we don't directly deal with it. The way we deal with it is, you know, your fit is in your hands, so you can upload from each side. We don't have a lot of guidance on what to do in that situation. It is something that we're working on in our next version on how to identify these things, what the approach is to adjusting for asymmetries.
Okay.
So we kind of, the fits in your hand, you can fit from each side and then go from there, basically.
Okay.
That might mean you have two bike fits, though, right? If you have one leg that's significantly longer, then what's the right saddle height?
Right.
And that gets more complex. In a lot of those cases, we will kind of refer out to a physiotherapist or a bike fitter, an in-person bike fitter who can wedge or make those adjustments.
Okay. Well, so the fact that they can do the bike fit on each side will alert them that there's something that's more complicated than the system can handle.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the other thing that has been on my mind a lot is indoor riding.
Yes.
Which has come to dominate my cycling. Tell me your thoughts about fitting for indoor cycling.
That's a really interesting one, because the question is, are you working for a position that you're just going to use on your indoor bike, or do you want it to be translatable to your when you ride outside? There is, when we're fitting for a road bike, we're considering, or when we're fitting for riding outside, we're definitely considering your bike handling, your aerodynamics, your sustainability in certain positions, where when we're on the trainer, that might not matter. Now, yeah. Riding indoors, you're typically still wanting to also use that fitness to ride outdoors. So if the two positions are drastically different, then you might not be preparing yourself for the outdoor rides. We see it with triathletes all the time who spend hours on their aero bars, but they have their TV down on the ground so they don't have to look up with their head. And they get out on the road and then they have sore necks. So there's a couple different philosophies. Riding inside is inherently more uncomfortable because you're more static on the bike.
Yeah.
So that's why we see things like rocker boards. Me personally, I like to set my front end a little bit higher and closer on my indoor bike than I do outdoor. We have a long indoor season here in Canada, so sure. We'll ride probably from November to April indoors. So that's a lot of time, and I'd like to be more comfortable for that time. And then it does mean there's a little bit of an adaptive period as I go back outside. But I think you'll have that anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess just logically, it would make sense that you would want, if you're going to have like two different bikes, say, which sets you up for having differences, especially if they're different brands and models, which could easily happen, has always happened to me, mm-hmm. then you've got to work hard to make sure, I guess, that from the waist down, that it's identical as much as you possibly can have it. And then if you want to take a little of the pressure off of your back and your arms and your neck, okay, fine. You can shorten and raise the front end a little bit. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I usually aim for a very similar seat position. So your engine is doing the same thing from the waist down, and then a little bit more conservative on the front end. So it's just a bit less strain to hold yourself up on the bike.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Another thing that has just popped in my head here is saddle. And so what I was thinking was, gosh, you really probably, you know, if you're going to set yourself up on two different bikes and you're going to try to get the same setup from the waist down on both bikes, then if you've got different saddles, well, good luck with that. What is your experience with saddles? And I guess you're going to say, well, your computerized system doesn't know about saddles. It just knows about how you're moving. But you're a bike fitter as well. What are your thoughts about saddles?
Well, that's if you don't have the exact same saddle bike to bike, it gets really hard to take a measurement that will let you confirm that you're in the same position on both relative to the cranks, right? Because you can measure from the tip of the saddle. You're seeing a lot of brands use what they call ARP, an anatomical reference point, where they take a point of the saddle that's, I believe some brands will use 70 millimeters wide, and use that as a reference point for fore aft, and up down actually, and for height. It still doesn't fully account for how you sit on the individual saddles. So you can have that point the exact same on two different saddles and you'll sit differently one versus the other. What I like to do is use that measurement to get close and then use a system like ours, my VeloFit, to measure yourself on the bike and check how your joint angles are actually moving. Right, because that's how we can confirm that you're doing the same thing, is that your knee extension is the same, your knee flexion is the same, your fore aft position on the bike is the same.
Yeah.
And that's how you can actually check to see what's happening. Because it's not uncommon to have different saddles in different places to maintain the same biomechanical movement.
I'm not sure I follow that. Different saddles in different places means what?
So if you have saddle A and saddle B.
Oh, two different kinds of saddles would require a different setup.
Yes, to have the same biomechanical movement.
Right. So you're essentially starting the fit over again if you're going to start with a different saddle.
Kind of, yeah. You'll want to, the approach is to start in a very similar position because it's not going to be a world different. But it's not unlikely to have. So I use pro saddles, and I have a pro Stealth on my cross bike and a pro Turnix, I believe, on my road bike. And they're different shaped saddles. So they're actually very different. But if I use, there's another pro saddle that's just a little bit rounder. And that actually requires an adjustment, even though they have all the same measurements, they're the same width, they're the same length. I have to have it higher and further forward with the rounder saddle for my personal riding.
I got it. And so, and that's not easy to tell by eyeballing it. You got to essentially start again. Yeah. And what about like the age of the saddle? I remember hearing that, saddles don't last forever. The cushion starts to compress and now you're not sitting up as high by a bit. And I guess if you're somebody who's pretty sensitive to a couple of millimeters, well, you've got to change now.
Yeah. There's some saddles are better and some are worse. The ISM saddles that the triathletes will use, and you've seen them on road bikes too, that have kind of the split nose.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the support across the front, you'll see those wear asymmetrically. And then the classic one as well was a Physique Aerion, which was their long saddle, which would kind of banana in the middle as people ride them more. And then, the very cushioned saddles as well will break down a lot.
Yeah. I remember one time trying to, on the advice of friends, which is, of course, that's a danger sign. I was trying to switch from a fairly flat saddle to a saddle that had a big curve in it, more like a saddle on a horse, maybe,
yes.
Where you would kind of, there really was only one spot that you would sit in versus the saddle that I was used to, kind of, I could sit in multiple places along it. Well, that, trying to make that work sent me down a path of, adjusting this and adjusting that. And thank God I kept track, because eventually I gave up and I just had to go back and put my bike back to the way it was. And because I liked it, I was just looking for a little bit of a performance advantage, but I could just never get comfortable on the bike again. So saddles, find one you like, stick with it.
And buy a few, because they like to change them every year too. I think they've stopped making my preferred saddle. So I'm gonna be shopping for a new one once this one goes.
Wow. Okay, yeah, bad news.
Yeah.
I better look into that myself, maybe buy some. Okay, well, good. Glenn, you got anything that, bike fit wise?
Yes, interesting, because this is quite a great discussion. I'm thinking, as the older athlete, as I get older, I notice my bike fit's changing. Have you seen this also in older athletes versus younger athletes?
Well, I wouldn't say it's just aging, I think there's a lot of, I'm actually writing an article about this one right now, is how your everyday life changes your bike fit. So it's the mechanisms of kind of how you change as you age aren't that different as, for instance, how you change if you, you know, move to a more sedentary lifestyle. Myself, for instance, I went from, you know, working in my fit studio full time, where I was up moving around, to sitting at this chair 10 hours a day, and it's really affected my bike fit. And I'm kind of constantly making it a little bit less aggressive, a little bit less aggressive. This is typically when I forget to do my, you know, dynamic cyclist program or any kind of regular mobility program.
Yeah.
So yes, we see, and you know, and aging is the classic one, right? As you age, you typically lose muscle mass. You typically get less flexible. And so we aim for a less aggressive bike fit typically as you go.
That's what I'm seeing in myself.
Yeah.
Less aggressive.
The good news
more
is,
conservative.
The good news is you can work against those things, right? Like being active and stretching and doing your mobility and strength work will help you maintain that position. The question is why, yeah. You know, we just had a big crit here locally that hadn't happened. Well, actually it did happen last year, but it had been paused with COVID. And some of the positions these people were riding, you know, I'm like, what, why? You know, to save 3 watts and compromise your right. comfort and your efficiency and your bike handling. There was a huge crash fest this year. Oh. And it was partially because, you know, a lot of people had positions that they couldn't handle. Literally, you know, it negatively affected their handling. The big one is the super narrow handlebars with the hoods turned in drastically. It's like, okay, maybe if you're a World Tour pro, but if you're a Cat 4, I think you're better off with your bike handling.
Yeah.
Well, I think about how way back in the day, like, aerodynamics was everything. And now it's like, I could care less about aerodynamics. I want to be comfortable on the bike. So...
Yeah, there is a value to aerodynamics, but I think there's a point of where, you know, people see what the pros are doing and then they overdo it. A lot of the moves that the pros have done are more subtle. There are the people with the ridiculous handlebars still, but to pick on the super narrow hood position or narrow bars with the cranked in hoods. A lot of times you'll see people get less aero because it pops their head way up in there and it puts their shoulders out wide. And those we're trying to reduce frontal area and that doesn't help. So you have to have a specific body type and mobility to pull that off.
Huh. Yeah, that makes me wonder with your system, is part of the process of evaluating the fit for people to kind of watch their power and see, you know, is the new fit injuring their power or helping their power?
Yeah, we don't talk about that much during the process, mostly because it's not uncommon to have a fit lower your power at first. If you come in and then we drastically change your position, there's a chance if you've been riding in that position for a long time, when you get out on the road, you might see a reduction in power for a week or two as you adapt.
Okay.
And then potentially, and you know, a return or an increase. It is a very difficult metric to measure how a fit, you know, affects your power in the short term. You know, to do it in the studio and measure power, you need to measure power against something, and heart rate isn't the one. So you're typically having to measure it against either blood oxygen levels or lactate levels, so which means you're using, you know, sensors that not very many people have.
Right.
And some of them are, you know, questionable accuracy already if we're already talking a 1 or 2% change in power. So it's a difficult, I always fit predominantly on comfort. You know, I want the rider to be comfortable, efficient, not injuring themselves so they can ride more.
Right. The more they can train, the better, the stronger they can get.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And the more they'll like it, and so the more they'll train.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
That makes sense. And if you're talking about a 1% improvement in power potentially, that's sort of under the threshold of the accuracy of the tool. So you're just sort of chasing your tail.
Yep. That's not to say somebody with a really bad position won't see a bigger change. There are, you know, people who see much bigger changes, but I would say they're the outlier versus.
Yeah. So if your saddle's way low, you're probably going to get a lot more power.
Yeah, or way high as well. You see, a lot of the people with the high pad, the high saddle, thinking it's going to help them, and then they go get outside of their functional ability to, you know, put pressure into the pedals.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Glenn, anything else?
That's really good stuff. I really appreciate it because, like I said, I see here in Korea, everyone has their saddles way too low, and I used to do a lot of bike tours in San Francisco, and people set their bikes up. We set them up, and they always want to lower their saddle because they want their feet to touch the ground. And then you watch them with their knees sticking out and everything else. It's fun, but I see a lot of that here in Korea too, because everyone needs their bike fit around here because they don't know how to ride bikes, and they don't ride bikes well because they didn't learn as children to ride bikes. They were too poor back then. So riding a bicycle is very, very unfamiliar thing from a lot of Koreans here, which is quite interesting.
Well, awesome. So as we start to wrap up here, what's your pitch? Why should people look to a virtual bike fit, and what benefits might they expect to find? And how do you guys do it to make it convenient and easy and safe and, feel right for the customer?
Yeah, so our product, the great thing about our product is free to try. So you can upload a video to our BikeFit platform for free, and we'll tell you right there if we're going to recommend it changes or not. To get the specifics of what the changes you need are, you do have to pay.
Yeah.
But we really recommend that, if you're curious, just upload a video, see what you think. And then we have a money-back guarantee on our fit. So if for any reason you're not happy with your fit, you can just email our support team and we'll happily give you a refund or try to help you figure out why you're not happy and kind of talk you through that.
Very nice.
Our sizing tool we have is completely free as well. It takes about 5 minutes to upload a video to that and get your results, and we'll tell you which bikes fit. We're completely unbiased. Our goal there is to get people on the right bike. We probably won't ever charge for this. This is kind of just to get people into our ecosystem. And it's a fantastic tool to play with, when you're shopping for bikes, to see which bikes fit and why. We've had a lot of great feedback on that with people, who have been looking for one bike and they've been told at a shop to buy that bike and they're just unsure. And they came back and used us and they found out, they were kind of way in the wrong place with that bike. So, that one's totally free. And then our two fit programs, we've got, it's $35 if you want to pay for a fit and get your recommendations. That's for one bike and it gives you 2 weeks of access. Or for $75, you can get a year of access and multiple bike profiles.
Wow, that's pretty price efficient. That's great. And it's not like one fit, it's do as many as you want within the whatever the timeline is that you bought access to.
Yeah, the $35 one, we do limit it to 5 uploads a day, just to kind of manage people, using it properly. The $75 one is for one person and unlimited uploads, unlimited bike profiles. And then there's also the option for an additional $75 to have me review your fit and work on you. So that's an add-on to either plan, and then I can help. Because sometimes the fit will get you close, but there's those little nuanced things like hood position or cleat position that we need to adjust. So I work with a lot of athletes on that as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess if your cleats are wrong, then you're never going to get anything right. So, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, and so how can people find you? You talked about some articles and how do they find your service?
So we're www.myvelofit.com on socials. We're at myvelofit on pretty much every platform there. And then, we have a contact form on our site if you need to reach us. And that's about it. Yeah, we have also, most of the major cycling news platforms have written about us. So Cycling Tips, Pez Cycling News. We just had an article in Cycling Weekly where they compared us to an in-person fit, which was really interesting because, they got the same result on either side. And they kind of said, you know, are we replacing bike fitters? And we really want to say we're our goal isn't to replace bike fitters. We do have a tool for bike fitters to use our software as their motion capture system. So we have a lot of shops using us as well as their fit tool.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right, Jesse. Well, this has been great. It's good to catch up with you again. Congratulations. Let me just ask you, how many bike fits have you guys done virtually? Do you know?
We've done, well, we're about to cross over 100,000. So we have a lot of people using our product. And yeah, and on the sizing, I was just looking at it. I don't have it in front of me, but we've helped people buy quite a few $1 million worth of bikes on our sizing side. So we're really happy about that.
All right. Good for the industry too. All right, yeah. Jesse. Well, hey, thanks again. Good chatting with you. You know, good luck with the fires and recovering your voice.
Yeah, thank you. I was hoping to go for a bike ride after this, but I think I'm going to have to probably do it on my trainer in the basement.
Yeah. Oh, well, sometimes that's what you got to do. All right, guys. Yeah. Hey, have a good one.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our talk with Jesse Jarjour about MyVeloFit. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. That'd be a great help. Thanks.